Last Sunday, we were in Psalm 126 as we're working our way through the Psalms of Ascent. We looked last week in that Psalm 126, particularly at the idea and the subject of joy. Not only that, we find real joy, a joy that lasts in the Lord, but also the result of that joy, the impact that joy has on our lives in the respect of the desire to share that joy with others, to see others experience that same kind of joy. This morning we're going to be in Psalm 127. This is a familiar psalm. It's often quoted in at least a verse or two here and there. Yet this morning we want to take a look at the whole psalm and how it ties and fits all together as a complete chapter. So if you have your Bibles, feel free to follow along as I read. You can also follow along on the screen. It says, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies at the gate. I want to begin by reading a section from the book Longing for Home by Stephen Ewell, I think is how you say his last name. He writes, "It consumes. When it grips us, it won't let go. It captivates our thoughts and overruns our emotions. It dampens our joy and disrupts our peace. It wraps its tentacles around our souls, tightening its grip until it saps us of all our strength. It keeps us from eating and sleeping. It prevents us from deriving pleasure from the good gifts that God has so graciously bestowed on us. It hinders. We aren't much fun to be around when it has us in its clutches. It strains the relationships between husband and wife, parent and child, brother and sister. It strains relationships among believers. On top of that, it makes us so inward-looking that we are useless when it comes to serving others. It puts us on edge. It makes us inattentive, unresponsive, and unsympathetic. It deceives. It promises to resolve what troubles us and to rectify what vexes us, yet it never contributes one iota to resolving any of our problems. It doesn't give any sound advice, nor does it contribute any deep insight. It doesn't render any peace or comfort. It takes all our time and produces nothing. It takes all our energy and renders nothing. It takes and takes and takes, giving nothing in return. I'm referring, of course, to worry." I don't know if any of you have ever struggled with worry. When I was a young teen, I remember having a period in my life where I just was consumed with worry and anxiety. And I would add to that list of things that he mentions, which I think is a pretty accurate list, that it also leeches away at our faith and our trust in the Lord and drives us instead to turn to human efforts in order to try to calm all of our fear and anxiety. Psalm 127, at first glance, you might think, well, this is about family. But really what Psalm 127 is about is it's a remedy for worry. It is a wisdom psalm from Solomon, and it's styled in much the same way as Ecclesiastes, with the beginning of the psalm about these three sort of pursuits, if you will, that as he declares, are vanity. It is often referenced as a blessing, or talking about the blessings of family and children, sometimes even prescriptively. But again, it's really about the idea of trusting in the Lord instead of the things that we sometimes turn to. Our tendency is to trust in our own effort, which leads us to anxious toil and worry and anxiety. Psalm 127 is a wisdom psalm that that helps us to change our perspective on these anxious pursuits and return to a focus on the Lord's gracious providence. Well, the psalm begins with a description of these three efforts, which, as I said, much like in Ecclesiastes, are pronounced as vanity. Let's begin by looking at these anxious pursuits in verses 1 and 2. Verse 1, it says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain." Now, the question that probably is asked about verse 1 more than any is, what is the house that Solomon is referring to here? And there are a number of suggestions. Some suggest that since Solomon is the writer, the author of this psalm, that he's talking about the Lord's house, the temple. And if you take that to be what he's talking about, then certainly that would be true. Solomon was responsible for the building of the temple. If the Lord, though, is not in this house, if he's not involved in that, if he's not supporting that effort, then that truly is vanity. It's completely useless to have a temple that God is not blessing or present in. Some look at it and think the house may be a reference to sort of the family, the Davidic line, if you will, of kings. And once again, that would also be true. If God is not supporting and behind the line of kings, then they're going to fail. And ultimately, in their disobedience, God disciplines David's line there in Judah. And so that proves to be true as well. The third way that it's often understood and used and quoted and so forth is just in a generic sense of house or home or family. And so you sometimes will hear this psalm quoted at a wedding or something of that nature, that particular section. And that is true as well. If we try to build our homes, our families, without the Lord, marriages and otherwise, with no thought of God, then there is going to be trouble and again, declared as vanity. Any way you understand this first verse, however you understand the word house, whatever you see it referring to, the point of that first part of the verse is it's referring to plans that we're making. So there are future plans, whether it's to build the temple, the future of the Davidic line, the future of a home or a family. It's talking about our future plans. And what is being declared is that if we make plans and we do not involve the Lord in those plans, if we make plans without a thought of God, then we are planning in vain. Whatever our plans are, whether it's plans for our family, whether it's plans for our jobs, our businesses, whether it's plans for our churches, for our retirement, whatever those plans may be, if they're our plans and we have not given thought to God, then we may as well put our trust in anything, because there's no guarantees in this life. Our plans, we cannot make them happen because we do not know the future. In my family, my grandparents on my dad's side were incredibly hardworking people. My grandfather on that side drove from their farm into St. Louis about an hour each direction to work at McDonnell Douglas. My grandmother ran a beauty salon there on the farm. They also ran the farm. And so they worked, sun up to sundown. Both of them had all kinds of plans, though, when they were retiring to go travel and to do other things. And then in 1976, when she was still fairly young, my grandmother died. And it took years for my grandfather to come to terms with that, because all of their plans were gone. We cannot make our plans and make them happen. James points to the futility of our planning with ignoring the Lord. He is the one who knows the future. It's His plan that we must be most concerned with. So the first of these anxious pursuits is the idea of our future plans. The second is the second half of verse 1. It says, unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Now again, that first one might have been a little bit difficult to understand. This one's fairly easy. If the first one's talking about plans, this one is talking about protection. That we try to protect ourselves. And we looked at this in depth a few weeks back when we looked at Psalm 124. But we said then that no matter how much effort we make in trying to be safe and, all of the safety measures on toys and all of the other things we do to try to protect ourselves and make sure that nothing bad happens, accidents still can happen. We can still lose our health. And no matter all of our effort, we'll still be anxious. Without the Lord. Without the Lord, we'll still be anxious about our protection and fearful about our future. And so then the third, in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. First, there's plans, protection, and now provision. A third anxious pursuit that we would be able to provide for ourselves and for our families. And again, I think it's important to understand this in the context that it's written. Solomon is writing this. It's an agrarian culture. Those of you who have a background in farming or know family or friends that have a background in that, understand this verse well, because you can toil from sunup to sundown on a farm, and if the rain doesn't come at the right time, as I'm sure some of our farmers are praising the Lord for this weekend, because you need rain, but then you're not going to have a crop. Or if you get a hailstorm at the wrong time, you may not have a crop. And so no amount of effort on our part makes those crops grow. And Solomon is pointing out the futility of all of our anxious work and toil. And that word toil has that idea of worrying about our ability to provide. And no amount of that is going to make a difference apart from the Lord. And the same is still true. Even if you're not a farmer, we can do everything right. And we can still end up without a job, without a way to provide for ourselves or for our family. If our trust is in our own ability to plan and to execute those plans, if our trust is in our ability to protect ourselves and our families, it's in our ability to provide, then we are pursuing things anxiously with worry that we cannot control. So we anxiously pursue our plans, our protection, and our prosperity in order to try to alleviate the fear. Solomon points out the futility of all of that, and then he helps us to refocus on our trust in the providence of God. Let's talk a little bit about trusting providence. Verse 2 talks about, in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he, talking about the Lord, grants sleep to those he loves. Now, when I use the word providence, what probably a lot of us think of is something along the same lines as what you'll find in some of the modern dictionaries. You think of providence as sort of God's help or God's guidance, his care, his hand upon your life. And that is true. That's a good, at least partial definition of providence. But the fuller definition of providence is that it's God's divine help or care, his guidance, based upon the foreknowledge, the omniscience of God. That we are trusting in God's ability to help us and to guide us based upon the truth that God knows the future, even though we don't. If we rightly understand God, if we understand what his word says about who he is and how he operates in our lives, then it makes trusting in providence a lot easier. It's hard to admit our own inabilities to control the outcome of our plans, our own inability to fully protect ourselves or to provide for one another. And so it's difficult to put our trust in the Lord unless we rightly understand who the Lord is and what He's capable of, that He is a God who knows the future. Let me try to illustrate it this way. If I told you that at the end of the service today, there's going to be a test, and that test could cover anything, any question about any person or any event or any trivia, whatever it might be, and it's a 20-question test, and you've got to answer all 20 questions right, and writing on that test is all of your income, all of your property, everything you own, your ability to provide for your family, therefore your lives and so forth, all of that is riding on this. You're going to forfeit it all if you don't get every single question right. And then I say, but you have the option, instead of taking that test, having the person who wrote the test and has the answer key take it for you. Now, that's a pretty easy decision, right? I'm not taking it. The Lord is our Creator. He knows you. He made you. He knit you together. He knows what you're like. He knows what your needs are. And He knows the future. Trusting in providence is trusting in the truth that God knows what is best for us. And it gives us rest. It says there that He grants sleep to those He loves. Those who are in a relationship with God have rest because the outcome is dependent upon the Lord. And we know Him and we know what He's like and we can trust in His providence. There still may be droughts. There still may be hailstorms. But we trust in God's providence and His care and guidance in our lives. Just this last week, I was visiting with a brother in Christ who is going through, a difficult time, a trial. And it's a trial not of his own making. He has every reason, really, to be angry, maybe even a little bitter, blaming some others for some of the difficulty. And yet it was interesting as I was visiting with him to hear him say how he sees God's hand in this and God's timing in this. And as we visited, he kept talking about other instances in his life where he thought he knew what he needed and he thought his plans were the best plan for his life, and they didn't work out and they fell apart and God had a different plan. And looking back, he was able to say, yes, God's plan was better than mine. God knew better than I did what I needed in my life. And so now in this time of trial is again trusting in that same providential care of God. So we have seen how instead of trying to plan and protect and provide for ourselves without God, instead, we put our trust in His providence. And so then we arrive at verses 3 through 5. And it seems like a pretty big shift. We've been talking about these vain pursuits and trusting in the providence of God. And now we come to these verses that address family issues and talking about children and so forth. And so let's take a look at these family matters that Solomon concludes the psalm with. Verses 3 through 5 address the importance and the blessing of family, especially our children. And as I mentioned, it can seem like a big shift from verses 1 and 2. However, if you look at it a little bit more closely, and you see what Solomon is doing here, what he's doing is he's using the illustration of family and our children as an example of what he's been talking about before. That we don't really have control over the growth of our family, the timing of the growth of our family. That we may have our plans and we have our ways that we're going to provide and we're working toward that. And if you can think of imagine a young couple that's just getting started and they're trying to get all of that figured out. And then along all of a sudden come, some children. And now you've got more responsibility and they take up more time and you have, fewer hands to work when they're little. Because now, somebody's got to take care of the kids while somebody else is working the farm. And suddenly things get a lot harder and it's a lot harder to provide for all of that. And it can be like, what's going on? My plans aren't working out. I can share in my own experience. My wife and I married while I was finishing up college. And we then were going to go on to seminary. That was the plan. And we headed off to Chicago, knowing that it was going to be a challenge to make ends meet living in the city of Chicago. I was going to seminary still, and the plan was Juliana was going to work full time. I found a part time job. We had all of that worked out, and we were about 2 months in to our time there, and found out that Juliana was expecting. And then about 3 weeks later, we found out that she was expecting twins. And all of our plans went right out the window because that changed everything. And there was a point there during that first year where I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to continue in school, if I was going to have to quit and go work full time to support and to provide for family. And we were just kind of trusting in the Lord along that journey. Solomon's reminder is this. He says, children are a heritage or an inheritance is the way some of the translations translate that. It's an inheritance from the Lord. That children are a reward from him. They're like arrows in the hands of a warrior that is sons that are born in our youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies at the gate. And again, we've got to understand this in the context of when it's written. Because what he's saying here is that these children that come along, while at some level seem like maybe a burden and a responsibility and more mouths to feed and all of these other things, in the context of that time were very important, especially later on in the long view of things. Because this is written when there's no Social Security, there are no 401ks, there are no nursing care facilities. When you reached a certain age and you could no longer work and care for yourself and provide, it was your children that helped care for you. And Solomon is pointing out that they are a blessing from the Lord. And here's where I'm going with this, that we look at those first few verses and we see all of these anxious pursuits and all of the ways that we're trying to make this happen and we're trying to get ahead and we're trying to provide and we're trying to protect, and God has a plan for it. And we may not see it. God has a plan for our future, and we may miss blessings today because we're so focused on our own idea of how it's going to happen. Now, in this case, his illustration, his example, is that of a child or children and family. But it goes beyond that. There's a broader application here in terms of how we understand what God is doing, his providential care for our home, for our plans, for our provision, for our protection. And so we need to refocus our attention off of ourselves and put our trust instead in God, instead of in our effort, in the providential hand of a God who loves us and has shown his love for us through his Son, Jesus Christ. Solomon isn't saying that it's wrong to make plans. He's not saying that it's wrong to try to protect your family or to provide for yourself and your family. What he's saying is to put your trust, your hope in your ability to do those things without God is vanity. Instead, put your hope and your trust in God's providence. Some of you, most of you probably have never heard of David Smallbone. He was a Christian music producer in Australia back in the 1980s when Christian music and Australia weren't quite so closely linked. In fact, his efforts failed And he lost $250,000 of his own money and had to sell his home. So he and his wife and their six children were without a home, and he was without a job. Thankfully, an offer came through for some work in Nashville. And so they sold the rest of their possessions, got plane tickets, and flew to Nashville, Tennessee. And then 3 weeks later, that job fell through. And so now they're in a completely different country, far away from family. They have no income and are wondering how on earth they're going to be able to stay together and how they're going to provide food for their kids. He and his children recall those very difficult days when they would often only eat one meal a day. Everybody was doing odd jobs, raking yards and mowing yards, pitching in money to try to pay for just basic shelter to keep the family together. And they were just thrilled when another Christian family gave them a van so that they could get to some of the odd jobs that they were doing. And sometimes groceries would show up on their doorstep, and sometimes money would be left in their mailbox. And they were kind of just eking by for months. And then around Thanksgiving of that same year, they got a phone call. And the phone call was from a record company, not offering a job to David Smallbone, but offering a recording contract to his oldest daughter, Rebecca, who was just 15 at the time. You don't know her by her real name, but her stage name is Rebecca St. James. David became successful in managing his daughter's career as well as other artists. Two of his other children, Luke and Joel, have formed the group for King and Country. Now, all of that is to say none of that was his original plan. His plan was to produce music and do tours in Australia. But God had a different plan. And as he trusted in the providence of the Lord, God made that plan come to fruition. Life doesn't always go as we expect. And let me also say that this isn't to tell us that if we put our trust in the Lord's providence, we're always going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Life does not always go as we expect. There are going to be seasons of drought. There are going to be times of difficulty. But the way we deal with the worry and the anxiety and the fear is by putting our trust in the providence of God, a God who is faithful, a God who has proven his love for us in the sending of his own Son so that we could be forgiven, so that we can walk through this life with him, so that we have the promise of eternity with him in heaven. And so we hold loosely to our own plans, but we hold tightly to him. Would you pray with me?